sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
S&P has the worst week since April. Small caps down 4%. Earnings season dead ahead. Fed, rates, eco, and much more. All this on episode number 372 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome. How are you? Andrew Horowitz here. It is dead center of July 2014, and we are going to be talking about all the things that are important from last week and this week. There's a lot going on. Hope you enjoyed our guest last week. We talked about last few weeks, actually, been pretty interesting, I thought. As a matter of fact, we got some great emails from you on that, and I know that when we hit a nerve, whether it's something we're talking about that you disagree with or agree with, we'd get a lot of emails, so it's always a good thing. You can write me at any time and ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And we talked about some of the inside doings at the Fed last week with the producer and director of the movie Money for Nothing, an inside look at the Fed. And we talked about some of the things about emotional impact of investing and the psychology of investing prior to that. This week, we're going to be talking about some of the straightforward items that are on the docket when it comes to the current week and last week, and kind of do a review and some of the things you need to know, because earnings season is here. And while there wasn't a lot of economics to really go over last week, there were some events that I think we should be talking about, particularly in Europe and how that affected things, as well as China. And this week, like I said, we'll rattle off many of the names that are expected to report earnings, because we have a lot of banks and some technology that are going to definitely shape things, especially with the market near, close to its high. We did see that the S&P had a pretty rough week. Really, it was 1 or 2 days there. And it was really based on the news from not only China that didn't have as much of a good number when it came to their imports and exports, even though the prior numbers on manufacturing over the last couple of weeks were a bit better. But the import-export numbers really were kind of missing the mark. And the question still remains whether or not it's normalized. Remember that last year there was the big controversy over whether or not China's numbers were real. And in particular, we were talking about the exports, because some of the things that were being exported were not truly exports. There was some currency, there was hard assets, and things that were mixed into the whole number because there was cross-border money moving, and there was somehow this consideration of import-exports, how that qualified. Well, China cracked down on that and said, hey, you know what? This is not what we're doing, because it is not part of our core numbers. So they changed their methodology and came up with what the new import-export numbers would be, but yet didn't go back and adjust the previous numbers, so now all of the comparatives were skewed to make the problems with China's numbers even more difficult. And here we are looking at the import-export numbers, and frankly, it's very confusing. It's very confusing to, I think, China. So how is it going to be providing us any clarity on what's going on in that country's economic situation? Because whether or not they're comparing the current numbers to the old numbers, or whether or not that's kind of gone at this point, which they say it is, and there's no longer a remnant of the old numbers, we really don't know. So here we are, looking at these numbers, scratching our head, wondering, are they good or bad? Here's what I tell you to do. Here's my best advice. Ignore them. I don't mean ignore them in that all the numbers should be ignored from China, but the import exports right now are absolutely a non-starter. There's nothing that we could really discern from those numbers because they are so screwed up. And this is on top of the fact that China, in my opinion, really doesn't have a good grip on their overall economic numbers. I've said this before, and I got to tell you something. It's really funny to me that China, the country that it is, as large as it is, with all its different cities and corruption involved in all of them, and what has happened over the years is that the individuals that are in government in the various reporting cities and sectors are bonused, if you will, or paid on how well they do. And who knows what kind of corruption is going on there and what's exactly the reality with the numbers that are coming out of that. And China magically comes up with a number in terms of the totality of all this, the calculation, that is usually pretty close to what analysts are predicting. I find that very hard to believe when it's so difficult in the U.S. when we have a pretty tight system to come up with a number that's so tight as compared to expectations and compared to analyst numbers that they're putting up. So generally speaking, China's numbers are suspect. But the second point here is that the import-export numbers should be thrown out. Don't even pay attention to them, at least for another year. At least so we can wash out some of the things that have gone on. Now, whether or not they're really catching all of the appropriate import and exports and whether some things are sneaking in or not, I can't tell you. I don't think anybody can. We know that China can't. That being the case, you and I cannot rely on that data for anything to do with our investments. So just throw it out. Don't even put it on the docket. Don't even look at it. Just take it and, you know, listen to it and we'll move on. But Portugal was an issue. Now, here's what's funny. If you remember back years ago, Spain and Portugal were really two of the hardest hit areas when it came to real estate. There was overbuilding that went on that was, it put our real estate markets to shame. The amount of loans that were made, the amount of property that was being built, the overpriced nature of all of it to begin with, in Spain and Portugal in particular, the incredibly high unemployment rate really made that market incredibly weak. The banks were falling apart. And this is putting Greece aside, by the way. We're talking about just Spain and Portugal right now. Italy too, but Spain and Portugal in particular were really the hardest hit areas when it came to the overall real estate bubble. So how much of that was healed? Well, with the ability for Mario Draghi from the ECB to magically create this feeling that things are okay, for banks to utilize the LTRO and other facilities to pump money back into government bonds, things got better for a while, at least on the surface. Real estate really hasn't healed there. The unemployment rate is still extremely high, in the 10%, 12% range, depending on where we're looking for those countries. And even higher for Portugal. Now, prices have increased dramatically. If you've watched what's gone on with the euro, they've obviously had a hard time keeping that euro down, and that's a big concern for the ECB. But Portugal really never healed. And as such, what we found last week was there was a bank in Portugal that was going to miss one of their key payments of interest on some of their fixed income. That was a problem. That was a concern. That was Thursday. The markets there fell. Concern was reignited that the ECB doesn't have things under control. We all know that, by the way. We kind of have some blinders on purposefully when it comes to Europe, saying, oh, you know what? We're not going to look at it. It's okay. You know, the ECB is going to do all they can. They can even possibly buy asset-backed securities with their next round. They're holding that back. They're holding back their firepower when it comes to asset-backed securities. They know they need to do that. Because what they're going to do is they're going to keep on pumping money into the banking system as much as possible. Now, what's interesting is even with all the money that they pumped in and all the leniency they've given these banks, we still have a bank that is having problems. Now, whether it's a one-off or not, really is going to be seen. We're going to see what happens if the ECB can't contain this situation. So on Thursday, jitters really hit the world. Combination of the data from China and also this issue in the news from Portugal really slammed markets. It was pretty hard hit over in Europe in particular. By Friday, hey, it's okay. We don't mind. Probably things aren't as bad as we think. So we had a one-day correction on this news. One day. Markets did start out a little bit lower on Friday, but came back and finished in the green. For the week, the S&P was down about 1%. The Russell 2000 was down about 4%. And Europe was down clearly for the week as well. Again, their currency is not helping them overall. And we're also seeing weaker data consistently out of Germany. And that doesn't bode well for Europe. It hasn't been a great situation. Even though their markets are hitting highs again, their bonds, the yields on the bonds of Portugal and Italy and Spain are hitting almost all-time lows, although they did pop pretty well after this news on Thursday. So where do we stand with this? Clearly the weakest link when it comes to the developed world has been and is going to be for this foreseeable future is Europe. In general, the Europe region is still very weak, and that's why the extraordinary measures that have been put in place very recently by Mario Draghi and the ECB are still continuing, where we're seeing that other countries like the U.S. and other countries around the world are saying, you know what, maybe we're going to slow down on some of the stimulus. As a matter of fact, last week there was a discussion that, you know, possibly October will be the last time that there'll be bond purchases by the Fed. They may cut down before the end of the year their total bonds that they're buying to zero. And we're even talking about the potential for an earlier rate hike. Now, whether or not that pans out and whether or not we actually come to the rescue again to Europe by doing some backdoor money transfers or other kinds of benefits to them when it comes to the banking sector is yet to be seen. And we won't see that for some time because it's usually, as I said, backdoor and behind the scenes. So what we have right now is some jitters that's going on. The VIX did pop about 20% last week, still below 15, which is still a very high level of complacency. In the 10s, 11s, 12s, maybe even 13, is still seeing that investors are very secure. They're not really buying risk to protect their portfolios. And we have seen a lot of buy the dip. As a matter of fact, on Thursday, even though the markets were down pretty hard, close to about 1% or so right at the open, they only closed down the S&P about 50 or 60 basis points on the day. Really nothing terrible. We did see that many of the high flyers, the social media, and those stocks in technology in particular, and biotech that had a high PE, really extraordinarily high PEs, got whacked. Twitter was down 8%, Facebook down 4%, Tesla down 4 or 5%, and the list goes on. So where are we? Well, we're still seeing that the U.S. is holding a PE ratio on the S&P of about 16.5, 17, depending on how you look at it. And we're still seeing that there is expansion of PE ratios. Now, somebody called me last week and asked me, hey, what does it really mean when we have earnings expansion or PE expansion? What does that exactly mean when they talk about that all the time on television, on the radio, et cetera? So I want to give you a quick discussion of what this actually means. Let's say that earnings are coming in round number at $100 per share for a company or for an index. But let's stick to a company and make it easy right now. And let's say that that stock is trading at 15 times earnings. Okay, and just numbers here. That means that the share price is 15 times the price earnings multiple, meaning that investors are willing to pay 15 times the amount of their earnings. It's PE, price earnings. Well, if the share price goes up and earnings stay the same, well, let's say it goes up a point or so, 2 points, whatever it is. And the PE now is 16. Earnings stay the same, PE is 16, means the price of the stock itself is more expensive considering the price earnings multiple. And then it goes up and it goes up. Let's say we get to 20. 20 times earnings the stock is now trading at. Now, one of two things are happening. Either investors are saying, you know what? It looks like, for whatever reason, that the stock's earnings are going to accelerate over time. And therefore, we're willing to pay a higher price now because we know that earnings are coming in better and we're willing to pay more for the stock today. On the other hand, it may simply be that investors are more bullish in general and willing to take on more risk and therefore say, you know what, because of the fact that we can safely, quote unquote, safely invest in equities. We're willing to take on more risk and we're willing to pay a higher price for these equities, knowing that, well, earnings may go up in the future, they may not, but we're willing to pay a higher price. So when you have this PE expansion, generally speaking, what that means is that there is a very bullish sentiment and that people are willing to pay more for the stock that was than yesterday or the last week or last year compared to where its earnings are. And that's, by the way, where you get into trouble. Because when they continually talk about, oh, you know what, earnings may move up a little bit, but we're seeing a lot of price earnings expansion, what we're really saying is that the bullish environment is getting overheated. We're willing to pay a lot more for the same thing. Think about a house that is currently, let's say, $1 million, but yet the appraisal comes in at $900,000. Well, why would somebody buy a price, put a price on a house, and maybe buy the house at that price if it's so much over the appraised value? Well, you can say that, well, people believe that that price is going to be low compared to what the price is going to be in the future, and they're willing to buy it now, even though the current appraisals are lower. I don't really buy that. You could say, well, the appraisals are low because there's a concern by the appraisers, and they're specifically lowering that down because they don't want to go too crazy with that, and et cetera, et cetera. Now, that being the case, you have to say to yourself, wait a minute, an appraiser on a house is like the analyst on a stock. The appraiser is the one putting the price valuation on a stock. An analyst on a house, an analyst is putting the price valuation on a stock. And are they so far off? Why are we willing to pay that much more? Why are we being so much more bullish? Now, the reverse happens too when you look at recessionary times. Usually in a recessionary environment, you'll see that the PE ratios contract because the concern is that maybe there's not a lot of spending, maybe there's not a lot of buying, maybe the company's earnings and revenues are going to be coming down, and therefore people are not willing to pay as much in the future. They think that the earnings will come down, so they're going to adjust it. Now, they may adjust it too low, and what happens there, you get stocks that are valued very cheap. And that being the case, that's when you want to look at buying those. When you see the PE ratios are 10, 12, 13, okay, maybe that's just something that you want to look at. But when you start seeing this expansion over the top, it's kind of like when, again, back to the housing environment, when there's a house for $1 million and all of a sudden that's the price that people are willing to pay, and all of a sudden bids for that come in at $1.1 million. When they're buying over the top, when they're bidding higher than the current valuation of the stock or the house. In this case, with the house, when they start doing that, there's froth in the market. It's too many buyers that are pressing on trying to buy a property at a price that is higher than the market, which becomes, by the way, the market. Then the next seller is going to raise their price. And this is how you get the appreciation or inflation of prices. But when you get far beyond the intrinsic value of the current and the near-term future valuation of the house or a stock, that's when you start getting concerning times and when there is a froth that is developing. And any kind of break, whether it's because of economic data, whether it's because interest rates go higher, whether it's because earnings start to come down, or in fact revenue sales come down, that's when you get the big corrections in the market. That's when you get all of a sudden houses sitting there not selling. Then all of a sudden the sellers start reducing their prices back down to normality. That's when you get stocks that are moving up, showing that topping action, because there's still that last minute buyer that wants to buy no matter what, and they'll buy and they'll try to peek it out. They don't care what price they're buying it at. And all of a sudden there is a vacuum of buyers out there. There's nothing left, and all of a sudden sellers want to get out, and they start very actively and aggressively reducing down their prices. And when that happens, you'll see that stocks will revalue and change. So right now, this PE expansion should be a little bit of a warning flag, something that you want to put in the corner there, that you want to say, you know what, unless earnings really show some nice growth over the next quarter or couple of quarters, that is going to contract back to where the normal average should be for the longer term, which on average is 15, 16. At 17, it's not high, but it's still in a point that it's probably higher considering all the growth we have from GDP, from our economy, and from the fact that there is the potential for a rate hike coming around the corner a few months from now. Now, anyway, so that's the whole discussion on PE expansion and what you need to look for and be aware of. Now, one of the things that we did is that we hedged out a bit last week in the TDI managed growth strategy. By the way, if you want to check that out, go over to the website, go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com where we have all the show notes, information, posts, etc. But there's also a link there where you can see a 10 or 12 minute virtual tour of the strategy. If you think it's time that, hey, you know what, things are peaking out, we go long, we go short. We have some of the core growth names in the portfolio. Last week, what we did was we picked up actually earlier on in the week some of the small caps. We also picked up the VIX and rode that a bit. We also, as you know, probably if you listen to DH Unplugged, we shorted GoPro, and that's doing pretty well. It's down about 7% on Friday itself. And over the weekend, we saw that in Barron's, there was a pretty negative article regarding the price valuation of GoPro. And you should take a look at that if you can. If you have Barron's, take a look at that. But with the concept that last week we saw that several different Fed officials came out with some, I would say, more hawkish commentary. And we see that the previous week we saw that the unemployment rate dropped to 6.1 and 288,000 were added to the payrolls. You have to wonder if the Fed believes that with the markets at these levels, because they're very focused on that, the fact that they are towards the end of the cycle, even though some people think this will go on forever, which is possible. Because I don't know, and frankly, I don't think any of us that are listening here know how the Fed is going to get out of this. How are they actually going to reverse course without crashing not only the bond market, but the stock market? And one of the things I've been talking about for some time has been, you know what, if there is a market correction or if there is a flight to safety of any size, why would people at this point really start banging into the bonds? Bonds have, yes, been bought. They were bought on Thursday with the market decline, but that's after a number of days when they were sold off. So maybe just kind of re-adding to the portfolios at this time. But also what we did see is what I believe could be one of the places that has been under love for some time gaining traction again, and that was precious metals. I think I mentioned that to you several times over the past few weeks. Gold was up about 1.3% last week. Silver was up about 1.3%, 1.38%. We also saw a nice move on platinum and palladium. Copper, still down for the year, about 2.5%. But if you look at gold, gold is up 11.5% for the year. This is defying the Goldman Sachs call for a massive correction in gold. Silver's up about 10%, platinum up 10%, palladium up 22%. And aluminum, we saw that Alcoa did beat and guide better, is up about 7.8% for the year. Now we're seeing other commodities take a real hit. We saw that corn is up, down 5.5% after being up this year. Wheat down 15% for the year. Cotton down 20% for the year. We're still seeing that coffee, which was ridiculously high at one point, is up 43% for the year, pretty substantial. Still have to wonder about how Starbucks is going to keep their earnings going with that, except for the fact they probably bought in at fixed prices, et cetera. But there's a lot going on when it comes to commodities right now, and I still believe that with the potential for more jobs and for more people working and for prices that we have seen time and time again increasing for goods, that inflation is not too potentially far off. Now, whether it is or not, I still think you have the situation with the flight to safety mode and what happens if it happens and where do people go. Well, I still think gold and silver are very good. And I also believe that if, when, possibly, who knows, if inflation does at least stay where it is or increases, there's a good possibility for gold and silver to rally. Now, with that, let's talk about one other thing. With the better U.S. economy in terms of the employment, And we've seen even manufacturing pick up and GDP will pick up due to inventory numbers that we saw last week. The dollar was down against all 13 currencies again last week, which is really fascinating. Because if you think about what happened in Europe, you would think that the euro should have fell last week, and it didn't. The yen, there's a lot of confidence that has been lost in Shinzo Abe about his plan, and pretty much that there's not much more that he can do at this point to really squash the yen much further. The yen rose as well. We saw that oil, if you looked at WTI crude last week, came in pretty hard last week, actually. It was down about 2% on Friday itself, down to about 100.83. That was down from a high about 107 not too long ago, right? What's going on there? It's kind of interesting because if you think about what's happening in the Mideast with Israel and Gaza and the potential for other peripheral countries to get involved like they usually do, unrest in the Mideast didn't have any effect on oil. So Libya opened up some of their oil lines, and that was beneficial. But the other thing that's really kind of in the background of this is the fact that in the U.S., we are producing an incredible amount of oil. And that could be the catalyst to bringing down oil prices dramatically. Now, with all the unrest that we see around the world, and yes, what's going on in the Mideast, I thought it was really interesting to see this drop. And if you look at all the fracking, we talked with Frank Curzio about this, and all of the oil drilling that's going on, and the findings and the finds that's going on, and the technology that we have now to explore and unearth this particular commodity that we're using, and add to the fact that there are alternatives like electric and natural gas that are being used to fuel things like cars and trucks, this could be a very interesting time for oil. Now, if oil prices drop, hopefully we'll see gas at the pump drop as well. Actually, gasoline prices last week dropped as well. And on Friday, they were down about 2%. You won't see that automatically hit the pumps. That's not, unfortunately, it's a bit of a lag. When the oil prices go up, you see it hit the pump. You see it hit the pumps within days. When they drop, it takes weeks, because the idea is that, maybe they'll go back up and people are used to this price anyway, and that's fine. So what you'll see is that certain oil companies that will be involved in gasoline and the conversion of oil to gasoline and refining will, in fact, do well. And you saw that overall, over the last number of weeks, that energy has been a great sector to be in. Warren Buffett was out Friday with the commentary that, yeah, he's still buying energy and all things are great in that sector and all. And I would say to you that probably it will continue to be so, even if gas prices drop a bit. Now, if they really plummet, you can have a lot of problems in that area. But yet, with this kind of a situation where they can hold a reasonable price of oil and gas, and add to that that they're producing so much more, that will make up for it. So the energy sector looks like it's generally pretty sound. You have to kind of pick your poison where you're going to be investing and what you're going to be looking at. But some of the E&P plays and also some of the peripheral companies that supply things to the industry, whether it's going to be, for example, for the fracking industry where you see the carbon slash glass slash rods that are used, the steel, all the different things that are involved in creating the actual drilling. Or if you look at something, for example, at the technology that's used behind finding and exploration of this, there's just a bunch of things out there that really could do very well. So keep your eye on the energy and the peripheral energy industry, all those things related to it. And I think that that's something you should take a look at. The other thing is, if you look at the gold miners, by the way, same kind of situation. So it's the miners that have really taken a hit, or did take a hit over the last couple of years as gold was coming in and silver was coming in. But now they've able to really close down things and restructure and create cost effectiveness and dispose of extra expenses now that you see gold rising. You saw about a 20% rise in the overall gold miners index, the ETF GDX, the juniors GDXJ, over the past, 4 or 5 weeks. Pretty impressive. So keep your eye on that. Everybody seems to watch the technology shares all the time and the social media shares all the time, but in the background, there's some significant rallies going on and some significant amounts of opportunity that we're seeing in some of these companies. Let's talk about economics. Not a lot last week, like I said, but this week coming up, let's talk about what's happening. So starting on Tuesday, we have the Empire Manufacturing number coming in. Not a big number. This is the New York / Northeast region, looking at a 17 from a 19, a little bit of a drop. But we have the same day at 8:30 in the morning, retail sales. Now, retail sales are expected to jump back a bit on a month-over-month basis from about a 0.3% increase last month, and that was May, to June's number of a 0.6% up for this month. That's on a month-over-month. Now, if we exclude autos and gas, it was flat last month, and we're looking at about a 0.5% increase that is expected this month. This will be very important because if you look at the amount of sales, we saw a lot in autos and gas. Obviously, the price of gas, et cetera, was high. But if you look at that and exclude that, and we're looking at a 0.5% increase, the idea here is that we're finally getting out of the doldrums that have hit sales due to all of the problems related to winter. Now, this should be a clean number in June. We should see that if we do see a snapback finally, which was expected, by the way, in May, and pretty much people, investors, and analysts just said, oh, well, one more month. Let's give it one more month. So this is the month. Here we are, June. There are no more excuses. Nothing else really that I think we can say that is a remnant of the winter season and that horrible situation where people weren't buying, etc. Now is the time where we should see a quote-unquote snapback. So I think that the beaten-up sector of retail could be in focus here early part of the week. And truly, if we see anything that is, I would say, lower than a 0.3% increase on the retail sales ex auto and gas, we have reason to be concerned. Walmart came out with some discussion about how, you know, we do see that the hiring is out there, but it hasn't translated to more sales. We're seeing that several companies in the area of the lower price goods, like the dollar stores, haven't been picking up a lot of business. Yet we do see the good numbers on the top end. High-priced items, luxury goods, have been doing well. Home Depot came out and also said that they're seeing some kind of a slowdown. There was other companies in the restaurant business, some good, like a Chipotle. They raised their menu prices, so that really helped them out a little bit, or actually a lot. Stock is back to about $600 per share, where like a company like Potbelly Subs crashed by about 24% last week on a pretty dire outlook. Crumb's Bakery was going out of business for a day or so, and somebody sent a lifeline in and is doing better. Many of the apparel, the lower-cost apparel companies, the teen apparel in particular, really have been just doing horribly. Numbers are not looking good at all. A couple of outliers there, like Zumiez, did a bit better in terms of their same-store sales, but yet there's this interesting paradox that's going on. The higher-priced and luxury items seem to be doing a bit better, and I guess this is due to the wealth effect, whereas the quote-unquote you and me, commoner type of companies haven't been doing as well. In fact, if you look at, I think, Home Depot, and if you look at, the midline companies, the department stores, you have to scratch your head and wonder, okay, what's happening here? So that's why I'm really focusing in on this number next week. Continuing on, we have business inventories expected to be about flat compared to last week, about last month, 0.6% up. Mortgage applications, we're hoping they'll be up a bit, but yet that's not a big number. But we're going to see PPI come out on the 16th. So PPI in the morning, this is going to be the cost of goods for manufacturing. So you have two inflation numbers that you have to focus on. One is the Producer Price Index, PPI, and CPI. CPI is the core, is really the core inflation number, the Consumer Price Index. But PPI, which is the input pricing and cost factors and the pricing of manufacturing, one step behind the final goods. Well, last month they were down. Last month, ex-food and energy, the PPI, was actually down 0.1% on a month-over-month basis, up 2% year-over-year, which was hot, by the way. On a year-over-year basis, it was hot, up 2%. Very concerning. This expectation is for a 1.7% increase. Still a bit high, because when you pass that down and you put on a certain margin for profits, etc., and then the final goods come out, one of two things happen. Either it's going to be passed on to the consumer, where we're going to be paying higher costs overall, and what happens there is that means that there's higher costs equals inflation. Or they're not going to pass it on because consumers are unwilling to pay for it, and they can't increase their prices, and the pricing pressure is not acceptable, and therefore they need to continue with their sales and their discounts, etc. And that means that they're going to have to absorb the cost increase, and therefore what you get is a margin contraction, and therefore earnings are down, if in fact you keep your pace with your sales, and therefore an adjustment back, as we talked about it, of the PE. So we're going to watch two things. We have retail sales coming out, and we're going to have to look at PPI the next day. Capacity utilization, 79.5%, very good. That means that manufacturing companies are working at about 80% capacity, which is towards the high end. You never get 100%. 80% is pretty good. Then we have the NAHB housing market on the 16th at 10 o'clock. This is the consumer confidence on what we look at for investors and consumers and what they're doing and their happiness factor. This is the builder's confidence number. Now, last month, we came out with a 49 that was higher than expected. This month, we're looking at a 50. Now, that's very interesting. We did see a much better retail number when it came to housing or new starts or new sales and existing home sales. All that came in much better last month. So you would think that we're going to see a happy builder. We'll see about that. Again, some of the final numbers from the spring selling season are probably here right now. We'll see how they look at the summer selling season, which is a bit lower than usually. The spring is the highlight of their year. Housing starts also on the 17th in the morning, looking at over a million, 1,025,000. Compared to last month, it's a bit higher. Month over month, looking at about a 2.4% increase. Now, last month, we saw a major drop, about a 6.5% housing starts. Now, why that was, not sure still. We'll see if it was a one-time blip. Building permits out also on the 17th. A lot of housing data on the 17th that you need to look for. And then finally, in the latter part of the week, we're going to see Philly Fed Business Outlook. That's the one that you really focus on. That's an important one as I see it. Looking for 16, last month was 17. Then we're going to see the preliminary number for the University of Michigan Conference Confidence Index. So the confidence index looks like for July preliminary coming in at 83. Last month, the final was 82.5. So that kind of rounds out the economics. I want to talk about some of the earnings because there's a lot of earnings coming up next week that we really need to focus in on. Now, before we get to the earnings, I want to just mention something. Earlier, I talked about the TDIMG managed growth strategy. I want to just mention Arrow for 1 second here. Arrow doesn't look at earnings. This is a strategy and an algorithm that we built. We're really focused on key technicals for the S&P 500. And the Arrow strategy basically looks for key, very oversold or very overbought conditions with the S&P 500. And why we're using the S&P 500 is because it is consistent. So it's not one stock or 10 stocks or 30 stocks like the Dow. It's 500 stocks. And we can get a real good read of the overall environment, and therefore, and it is also the key index for institutional and large traders. And being that, you get a really good read on the overall environment, and as such, we can get some good signals when it comes to the overbought or oversold. Now, recently, what I find very interesting is that when we get our number, we assign a particular level to the arrow calculation. And when we do so, it's been very shallow moves. We haven't seen too many. We saw that one about 3 or 4 weeks ago that I mentioned was like a 75 on the plus side, which is extremely high. We haven't seen much on the downside, and that 75 only lasted a few days, and that was from there exhausted pretty quickly. You know, you have to come down a little bit to bring that lower, and all of the approximately 12 plus indicators inside of the arrow working together to give us a one reading. It lasted a day or so, and that was a signal actually to sell the long position. And only a couple days later, there was another signal that came because it came down so quickly. Not much, but still quickly on a very thin range that has been in the S&P for some time and really been trading within a pretty narrow band, that we got a buy signal. So right now the arrow is, in fact, long. But if you're interested in this, you could also go to the TDI website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Click on the arrow. You get more information, plus all the back information, the strategy, the overall process that goes into it and how it works. Basically, it's in the market long, it's out of the market, or it's short the market. Those are the three possibilities. Go in, out, along. It's good for IRAs as well as individual or joint accounts, etc. So if you want to check that out, that is available to you. $50,000 minimum to invest in that. Let's talk about earnings. So what we have coming out, starting, these are the key earnings, by the way. This is not all of the earnings, but the key earnings that are coming out. We have Citigroup on the 14th. That's going to be prior to the market. And we know that Citigroup has had some trouble with things. They weren't able to increase their dividend. They weren't able to do additional buybacks because of some kind of accounting nightmare that they had going on there. But estimates are for $1.06 on $18 billion of sales. Now, earnings over the last 4 weeks, the estimates have been brought down about 7%, considering, I guess, what went on with the Just Meat by Wells Fargo. And we have J.P. Morgan on the 15th in the morning. $1.31 on $23 billion. Their estimates have been about flat. Goldman Sachs, about $3 on about $8 billion. And then we get into, on the 15th also, Intel and Yahoo, Johnson & Johnson, and J.B. Hunt, the transportation service. So we're looking at all of these. Intel looks at 56 cents per share is the estimate on about $13.5 billion of sales. And then we start rolling along. I mean, you got Bank of America on the 16th. You got SanDisk on the 16th. You got Yum Brands, which is a good read on China. Bank of America looks to make 29 cents on $21 billion. Their estimates were reduced down about 5% also. A lot of reductions on this list of estimates. Let me see if there's any major increases. Intel was increased, actually, about 2.5%. CSX was increased about 2.5%. But a lot of flats to negatives here. I'm trying to find Advanced Micro Devices, their estimates raised 3.5%. Here's one. American Airlines Group, they're coming out on the 18th. Estimates raised on the EPS about 8.5%, looking for $1.91. But otherwise, we have Sherwin-Williams, good read on the building and housing market, looking for $2.92 on $3 billion of revenue. That's on the 17th. United Healthcare is a big one, $1.26 on $32 billion. Of revenue, and that's coming out also on the 17th. We have Morgan Stanley coming out on the 17th, looking for 56 cents. I'll put this particular key earnings list, and I'll link it inside the show notes so you can see everything that's going on. It's a good spreadsheet that shows you the EPS, the expected time, when the earnings are going to come out, the change, and the implied move for the day. But we have Google coming out also on the 17th after the market closed. $6.26 is the estimate on $12 billion of revenue. Let's see what else we got here. Bank of America, Johnson Controls, GE, lots. Big week, very big week. Whirlpool also coming out on the 18th. And on the 18th, we also have Kansas City Southern, another transportation. Gives us a good read on what's going on in the economy in terms of the overall strength of sales of equipment and of larger transportation types of things that have to be transported, I should say, across country on rail. So that's going to be pretty significant, I think. We're going to have to watch the VIX also next week. That rise of about 20%, still questionable. It was definitely low, no question about that. So that rise didn't really bring it back to anything significant. But I still think that if you see that there's going to be a consistency of earnings beats, you'll see that VIX come right back down again. And if there's some misses and it's consistent, whether it's one sector or it's a theme that we're seeing here, clearly we know that revenues still are not picking up very much, but yet this is going to be supposedly the best EPS totality in terms of companies on the S&P 500 than we've ever seen. Now, with Israel and Gaza in the background heating up again, and we see that the dollar falling, you know, there is some question out there, and I think that probably when we're not at the end of the Portugal situation here, I think that we just saw the tip of the iceberg when it came to some of the European banks. So we're going to look at that. We're going to also be watching Amazon. Amazon got a lift on its phones and drones last week. It was up about like 5% on the combination of the release of the phone and some more information that came out about that, as well as their request to do short flight drones to deliver very quickly, same day, items that have been purchased from Amazon in certain select areas, of course. So we're going to see that. Plus, Yellen's going to be talking next week. Lots going on next week. So we're going to really have to take a look at what's going on there. So anyway, we're going to keep this kind of short today. I'll put all the information we talked about on the earnings up on the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I think we're going to be watching small caps, and that's a good tell, even though they are usually more aggressive and more volatile than key markets, of course. But down 4%, one of the worst drops we've seen in a while, even though they have been on a tear for some time, is something to keep a watch for. Anyway, thanks for joining me. And any questions, send them to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I'll be doing a TradeStation Tuesday stocks and ETF update on Tuesday morning at 11 a.m. Go over to TradeStation.com and go to ETF, or just do a search on Google for stocks and ETF update for TradeStation, or over at TriggerCharts.com. All the links to actually get in there and see what's going on. We'll have some replays, but all the links are over at TriggerCharts.com as well. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you again next week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.